hit it.
And welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
All right, here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and we are going to have a really interesting show today. We're going to be talking about turning tough situations into gifts for those that are affected next living with dementia. It's not always an easy road, but it's so nice when someone shares what they've learned on that process, and that's what we're really going to focus on today because there are so many beautiful gifts wrapped in caring for someone with a form of dementia. Now, if you liked our opening music, I do want to point out that is called Clarion Call by the Mark Arneson Band, and you can go ahead and download that anywhere. And for some of you that might be new listeners around the world, we are about sound information, not just sound bites. We like to have real conversations with real people at all ages and stages and levels of organizations and businesses around the world. So here you will hear from people living with dementia. You will hear from care partners. You will hear from a variety of business professionals, researchers, advocates, and so much more. We are live today, so if you have any questions pertaining to this topic or comments, you can call in at 323-870-4602. That's 323-870-4602. And we also have a main website. We're more than just a podcast. We really are an educational and resource platform. So you can go to alzheimerspeaks.com. There you will find one whole section that is free resources that you can tap into. So please go there. You will find anything from resource tools to dementia chats where you're going to hear the voices of those living with the disease, to arts and dementia. We've got a poetry and article section. Maybe you're interested in becoming dementia friendly, or you've heard about memory cafes and many other things, including Dementia Map, which is our global resource directory that you can check out by just going to dementiamap.com, or you can get there through our free resources as well. Also, we have a new tab on our site, and that is labeled Book. Betty the Bald Chicken, Lessons in How to Care, is finally becoming a children's book. We've had so many requests for that because that has been a keynote of mine for many, many years. And we finally put that together, and we are doing pre-orders right now, but that will be hitting the press fairly quickly. So feel free to check out that page. I'm still building it, so it isn't, everything's not perfectly in order, but it'll give you basic information there. We are going to hear from the Adaptive Equipment and Caregiving Corner, and then we're going to be right back with our guest.
I love the footbar walker, and let me tell you why. It is the option for my toolbox that I've been waiting for. Let's be honest. There are some clients who, despite our best rehab efforts, just aren't able to return to performing a sit-to-stand transfer on their own. Now I can offer my caregivers an easier, safer option that doesn't involve hoisting their loved one up from a sitting position. I don't recommend this walker for all of my clients, but I do recommend this walker for those caregivers looking for an easier, safer option with transfers. I would also encourage other therapists to add this walker to their toolbox. It's kind of like having my own mobile parallel bars for the client to pull up on. Whether it's a family caregiver at home helping a loved one with Parkinson's or dementia, CNAs in a long-term care facility assisting their patients, or therapists adapting to client and caregiver-specific needs, we now have a very safe and effective option to offer in the Footbar Walker. Check this product out at thefootbarwalker.com. That's it for today from Adaptive Equipment and Caregiving Corner. Have a great day, and don't forget, if you can't do it, adapt it.
Wonderful. Well, we are back, and I'm so excited to introduce you to Johanna Hernandez. She knows what it's like to be a dementia, you know, care partner because she's been one herself. She knows that it can be one of the most difficult and yet most joyful, rewarding jobs that you can ever have the privilege of holding because she cared for her own grandfather. She has learned many things on that journey, and now her goal is to provide education to care partners while reminding them to care for themselves. So welcome, Johanna. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am thrilled that you're with us. We got to talk a little bit prior, and I was just so interested in all you're doing. I always, you know, ask every one of my guests if they've been touched in their own family or circle of friends, and I mentioned that your grandfather has, but was there anyone else in your family, or if you want to tell us a little bit more about your grandpa and honor him?
Yeah, luckily we have not been affected with anyone else within the family. So it was just my grandfather, and my mom was actually his primary caregiver. I was his power of attorney. My brothers also helped with caring for him, so it was really like a family effort all around. I would go on the weekends to kind of help my mom with a little bit that I could, and also I would try to get her out of the house to do some self-care stuff, get her nails done, let's go out to eat, let's go for a walk, window shopping, whatever. But my grandfather was living by himself for a long while, actually. And all of a sudden, he was living in a building with elderly people, but it was all independent, and he started forgetting his keys. He started forgetting things on the stove. He would fall asleep. The fire department was there numerous times, and the building finally, you know, talked to us and said, he can't stay here. It's a safety concern. So we had to make a decision in bringing him in, and he agreed to it because he didn't want to go to a facility. But at that time, we were in a community that was primarily Hispanic. Not a lot of resources in that area or that we knew of. And we really, at that time, didn't know anything about dementia. Just on a side note, I'm a nurse now. But at that time, I was not a nurse. And so we ended up struggling for a long time. I remember my mom, you know, having very hard moments, long discussions, and sometimes just crying or upset because he would take a lot of things out on her. So it was really challenging. And once we got some resources, we found out she ended up having to leave her job to stay with him full time. And we had to get other family members to help with assisting also. So we found out an agency, and then we got some education. He had to get his doctor recommended us to a neurologist who explained exactly what dementia was. Because before that, we were like, he's just old. So that's normal. He's just old, and we just didn't know. And then, you know, it proceeded from there. I mostly controlled all his health questions or anything that needed to be addressed, and his financial stuff every month. And then everybody else primarily did everything else because they were living in that area. I was an hour and a half away, so when I would get off of work on the weekends, I would try to head up there as much as I could. Until he finally passed away. He passed away at home, on home hospice. So we got to see all of the stages with him living with us, which was definitely different. And a sight. It was difficult because now I learned, you know, what the grieving process is and the stages of grief. And Now, as of recently, I started saying it's crazy because you go through the grieving process with someone with dementia twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought about it like that until recently when somebody stated to me, you know, I'm losing my mom and she's still here. And that's when I realized it then. So, yeah, that's the story.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. It's always nice to hear, and not necessarily nice to hear that you were struggling, but for our listeners,
mm-hmm.
it really gives them comfort a lot because you
mm-hmm.
feel like you're the only one out there dealing with this so often.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I hear, and it sounds like you hear that too from people.
Yeah.
And so the more we can all share our stories, the better off we all are because we all have information that can help somebody else, even when we feel like we don't know, you know, diddly squats about what we're doing or what we should do next. You have learned through trial and error. And even if you've done some things that haven't worked, those things are helpful for people as well. And it's not something that you should be embarrassed about because you're out there trying, you know, to improve the world. Let's talk about how the lack of kind of knowledge and resources impacted you to even step into this space. I know it did me too, but it's always nice to hear somebody else's story and kind of how they landed here.
Right. So at that time, like I said, we were in primarily a Hispanic area. It was a lower income community. There was really no resources that we knew of. We were uneducated on it. So we never saw any representative or any signs or anything about, you know, the Alzheimer's Association or having to talk to someone in the community that also was experiencing the same thing that we were experiencing. The crazy part about it was that my mom was a CNA. And so she used to see it at that time frequently, but she was in denial in the sense of that this is dementia. I was not in the health field at all at that time, so I didn't know anything about it. And even with that experience and that education my mom had, we didn't know where to turn. We went to his doctor, and originally his doctor was like, you know, it's just normal aging. It's the normal aging process. But when the building told us that we had to take him because it was a dangerous situation now, you know, we did go back, and they did give us a referral to the neurologist. From the neurologist is where we learned where to go for other research in learning what dementia was.
Mm-hmm.
Even with that, I didn't know that dementia was, you know, that the association was open for 24 hours a day, that you were able to talk to anyone at any time. I also didn't know that there was resources within the community and smaller agencies that will actually help with caregiving for someone and will pay them or send somebody out to care for them in the home. We didn't know. So eventually we ended up talking to someone who was using a company, and my mom knew about it, and then she got the information that she needed, and then we made a call, and I set everything up, and we were able to get some more resources. From that point on, our doors just opened because at that point we had a point of contact. We had someone to talk to. He had a case manager that we were able to talk to on a regular basis and say, hey, this is what we need. So it kind of alleviated some of that stress within the family.
That makes a huge difference. And it is so true. You don't know what you don't know until someone,
mm-hmm.
you know, tells you or directs you. And so you just feel lost in the woods, you know, and
yes.
kind of overcome. And
mm-hmm.
and it's really sad. I know the lack of resources and connections for me is what made me start Alzheimer's Speaks. It was just like,
yes,
we've got to do a better job. There's got to be a better way. And then I was shocked to learn how
mm-hmm.
many services, products, and tools and people are out there going through all of this. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you said you weren't giving the Alzheimer's Association, you know, we didn't know about them either. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've just heard rave reviews from, especially now with the 24/7, you know, response. And I believe they have like social workers and things answering the phones now.
Yeah.
And it just, people have told me over and over, that's just been a total lifeline, you know, for them.
Mm-hmm.
When did
it's
you
It's funny
realize,
because that's when I got into getting the training for dementia, because later, when I became a nurse, I went into a facility. It was one of my first jobs, and I ended up being in a memory care unit. And I remember the lack of education with the staff even. And one day I happened to see this flyer to get certified in dementia. And I said, well, let me give it a try. And I learned so much with that seminar. I actually took it a couple times. Because it's just, I learned so much each time. And I continued with that certification, and I actually went all the way to being a trainer for the same reason. That's why I decided to open Puzzle Mind and Body, because I wanted to be able to provide education for caregivers, like free resources they can use. I also offer, you know, paid resources, but I do provide a lot of free education, because it's just such a huge lack of education. I'm like constantly on social media posting whatever I can just because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do the same thing, and not everybody can afford to be putting money hand
right.
over fist. You know, there's so many
mm-hmm.
other needs that come up, or there might be loss of
mm-hmm.
income within the family. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
just, you know, you kind of go over and over again. I do want to remind listeners, if you have a question or a comment, please feel free to call in. That number is 323-870-4602. That's 323-870-4602. So when did you, you know, realize that caring for yourself became an important factor in this whole caring for others? Because I think so many people don't recognize that. I know I was one of those.
Yeah. So I actually never thought of myself, because I was never the primary caregiver. We're a very close, tight family. Like we are very close. We talk every single day. And it was the same when my grandfather was here. So I knew everything that was happening, but I wasn't physically there, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. But I saw my mom going through the stress of being a caregiver, and realized, okay, she needs help. She needs assistance. I didn't realize how much of a toll it was taking on me to help my mom care for herself, or to worry about her even, until actually the day that my grandfather was passing. Well, it was like a few days, but when I got the call that he was already starting the process, my mom called me and asked me to come. That night I got off of work. I didn't go. The next morning I was supposed to go to my mom, but I couldn't get there. I just couldn't do it yet. So, and this is my mom's listening. This is the first time she's ever hearing this. But I actually decided to go to a yoga class. And I took two yoga classes back to back, because I was already active doing it, to mentally prepare for what I was going to be walking into, because I just couldn't face it. So I did my two classes. I did some meditation. I got in my car and I drove, and I stayed there the rest of the time. I think it was like a week or a week and a half that I was out there. And that's when I realized that I had to take care of myself before I was able to take care of anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't do it. I just knew at that moment I was not going to be able to do it, because I knew how close-knit we were, how hard it was going to be on everyone, including myself. So I needed to mentally prepare myself for that. And that's the first time I realized that I needed to. I didn't think that I had that much stress on me at that time until that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is funny. For I think so many, it's kind of the crash and burn moment, you know, where
yeah.
you're up against the wall and then you're like shocked, like what happened? And then you look back and go, oh, it didn't
yeah.
just happen. It's been happening. And,
yeah.
it, you know, it's just, it's one of those things we have to be really, really careful of, because if we aren't careful with how we care for ourselves, you know, we're not going to be able to care well for somebody else. And we all know that. We all understand that. And yet I still think most people don't slow down and go, okay, this is really, really important. And this isn't just talk. This has some major, major impact, you know, with it all. How did you come up with the name for your company?
So when I went for my dementia training, when I was doing the train-to-trainer program with them, they asked us to do a pamphlet. And I said, okay. And they said, come up with your own name, do a pamphlet. They wanted a sample of it. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I don't even know how to, like, what to call it. And then I said, well, you know, the mind is like a puzzle. And I said, well, you know, I think I'm just going to say Puzzled Mind. Originally, that's what it was going to be. But as time progressed, that's how I came up with that part of the name. As time progressed, I learned more about the holistic view. So I really got into heavy learning the holistic world. And I got into Reiki and yoga, meditation. And I started becoming trained in those fields. So I'm a yoga instructor, a Reiki master teacher. I am currently finishing up my meditation coaching certification, and I'm actively doing an aromatherapy course to become an aromatherapist. So I said, well, that's part of the body. It's just a hook. The whole body is the holistic. So I ended up adding that to it because I wanted to combine it for the caregiver. My main concern is not only for people living with dementia, it's also for the caregivers. So I said, well, Puzzle Mind and Body is perfect because we're taking care of the mind, educating the mind, and also taking care of our bodies. And that's how I decided to come up with it.
Well, it's a great name. It's a great name. And I love that you incorporate the holistic side too, you know, with that. I think that there is so much value in that, and just, you know, the social connection, the belief that there are things that we can do for ourselves, you know, to help with this disease process. And I think many times people, you know, just go, well, I need a pill. And it's like, a pill would be nice. You know, we'd all love to have a pill and just make it go away. But, you know, typically with any illness, it's not going to just be a pill. And some of these lifestyle changes can just be absolutely, you know, huge in terms of what we can do to have, you know, more control over our mind and body and things. Do you do stuff with art at all, or?
No. I would love to connect with someone that does, but no, not currently.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that, you know, so much of the arts is really helpful for people as well on that. Let's talk a little bit about how dementia, you know, affects the loved one, and then we'll kind of get into, you know, what are some of the hardships and the gifts that family can see when dementia knocks at their door.
Yeah, so it is definitely challenging for the person living with dementia in the beginning, because in the beginning, the person that is diagnosed with dementia realizes that something's wrong. Sometimes they're in denial, sometimes they're not. But the frustration and the anger comes into play at that point, because they know that something's wrong. As time progresses, I think it's more affecting the caregiver and family rather than the person living with dementia or just the dementia person, just because by the time the family's starting to get involved, the mind is slipping away. It gets to the point that they don't remember anything, but their loved one is there having to deal with that part, and it's forgetting their name, forgetting who they are, thinking that they're being poisoned. And it's very hard on someone who's a caregiver. For example, I remember one day my mom was, I was there for the weekend and she was taking care of my grandfather, was giving him lunch. It was leftovers from the night before because she was getting ready to start cooking dinner. And so he screamed at her, no, that you're poisoning me. And it was always that she was doing something to him, which she took very good care of him. And so I remember her coming down like, I can't do this. You need to figure out what you're going to do with your grandfather. I can't do it anymore. We waited a few minutes and I took it up to him and I gave him the food and in Spanish, grandfather's abuelo. And I said, abuelo, like, I worked so hard in cooking this for you and mommy said you don't want this. And he's like, oh, no, honey, I'll eat it. And he ate the whole thing. He had coffee, he had juice, and everything was fine. It was just towards my mom because she was the primary caregiver. And that, it wears down on them. It really, really does. And I didn't realize it until she started having neck pain, spine pain, muscle pain. And she was constantly complaining that something was wrong. And here, kind of find out, it's just the normal stress of what was happening. Well, not normal because it's not normal. It's just something that was happening to her. And she just didn't know how to handle it. Her body was handling it for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. And, you know, people having, you know, hallucinations or delusions is so mm-hmm. common where they're seeing a whole different reality than what they are. And that can be something that they hear, something that they see, something that they smell. I mean, and you know, families, we don't know about all that kind of stuff. Nobody talks about that until you're at your wit's end and maybe you finally get a doctor that can explain it to you. And that's why, you know, being able to connect with professionals and other people who are dealing with this. And to me, that means both those living with dementia, they have a lot to say mm-hmm. and can teach us a ton,
yeah.
as well as yeah. other, you know, families that are out there as well. You know, it is a really difficult thing to balance. When, you know, and I was glad that you said, too, that, you know, as the disease progresses, you know, I hate to call it the burden of care, but it really kind of falls more on the family member than the person mm-hmm. living with the disease. And in the early stages, I mean, they worry significantly mm-hmm. about those that are caring for them and their loved ones and how this is impacting mm-hmm. them. And yet we all know eventually, because again, this is something that's not told to us, the more the person living with dementia is stressed, the more symptoms typically they're going to have. And so,
right.
you know, when my mom got kind of past that stage of worrying about things and then she kind of went into like a paranoid state where she just didn't trust a lot of people. After mm-hmm. that, then she got to a really pretty peaceful place. And everyone's mm-hmm. journey is different. So I'm not trying to say everyone's journey is just going to be just like my mother's because, mm-hmm. It, mm-hmm. you know, everyone is different. But as a care partner for her, that just allowed me to kind of breathe a sigh of relief because I felt like she wasn't, and again, I don't really like using the word suffering, but, you know, she wasn't mm-hmm. battling this disease anymore. She wasn't trying to fix it. She wasn't worried about being embarrassed or doing something wrong or, you know, all of those things that just can weigh on a person living with dementia at times. And did you, with your grandpa, did you kind of feel a sense of relief once he got to that point too?
Honestly, I don't know if I did actually, because he was never an angry person, and it's funny mm-hmm. that you said that with stress you'll start seeing the changes even more, because we didn't know that either. And my grandfather was always, even when he had that dementia, he was always up with us in the morning. I was already older, but I have little brothers that were going to school at that time, and he watched them leave the house to go to school. And I remember that he fell. He was just turning around and was getting ready to walk up the stairs and fell and broke his hip. We ended up taking him to the hospital, and we saw such a decline, and we had no idea why. We didn't know. And so my mom, they took him for surgery. We left to get something to eat. We said, we'll come back later. And when we come back, they have him in a one-to-one. And we were like, what in the world? Why? And they're like, oh, he was aggressive, he was violent. And we were like, oh, is it that anesthesia? They said, oh, maybe, but he also has dementia, and, you know, this is it. And he was fine with us. It was towards the staff that he was really angry. And we just couldn't believe it because my grandfather was very, like, he wasn't an angry person that way or violent. And so when he progressed, he was always good with all of us. And he had his moments. He had more good moments with my mom, but he always gave my mom a hard time. Always, mm-hmm. always gave her. He just wanted to give her a run for her money. She actually, he would do things and just start laughing because he thought it was funny. He was just like I got you mad. It worked. And I would tell her, Mom, stop letting him like get to your head because this is what he's doing. Just laugh about it. And we kept seeing that, but it was never towards anybody else but my mom. So my mm-hmm. mom still saw that part that he was just fighting and everything. For us, honestly, there was times that he needed a bath and my mom was trying to give it and he wouldn't do it. And I'm like, Willa, you have to go. If you don't go, I'm going to put you in myself. And he was like, fine, I'll go. And then he was fine. But it was always my mom. My mom was the target all the time.
Oh, yeah, and, mm-hmm. and that's kind of the way it goes. It, there can yeah. be a target.
The primary
or might,
person. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or they mm-hmm. can, mm-hmm. you know, recognize certain people differently. I'll never forget mm-hmm. when I was younger, a neighbor of ours, uncle, had dementia, and they were very good friends, Patty and Bruce. And he and Bruce was a tall guy, but, you know, back in the day had long hair. And he would always refer to her as, what was it, the lady at the bus station. And they never mm-hmm. knew why mm-hmm. or the train station or something, but that's who Bruce was. And he was very comfortable, mm-hmm. you know, being around that person. And so it was one of those things where you realize that, you know, it's not what they call you. It's really, you know, how are they feeling around you? How are you making them feel? But,
right.
it's hard when you're a target and you feel like you're trying so hard to do what's best mm-hmm. for them and getting attacked. That can be just emotionally just grueling, you know, on mm-hmm. somebody's heart with that. And mm-hmm. again, things that a lot of times aren't talked about that we get to look forward to. And I think sometimes they think if they tell us these things, you know, we'll get worried and paranoid. But, you know, there's this sense of being prepared and to know that it's normal. It gives a lot of solace, I think, too. And I think it depends on how it's delivered. You know, like there's some books out there that have there's so many things and people look at them and go, oh my gosh, all these things are going to happen. And it's like, no, not all of them. This is just how they can crop up. And every single person with dementia is going to be different. And every single care partner is going to react a little bit different. And, you know, the environment can change how we react, the people in our surroundings, all of those things. You know, somebody can be really calm and then somebody walks in the room and an attitude changes and we go, oh, that's and we go, oh, that's dementia. It's like, well, how many times have you walked into a meeting and, you know, the whole atmosphere changes because you or someone else walked in, you know, or family or friends. I mean, that isn't just dementia. That is something I think that we don't talk about in terms of our nonverbal communications and how things are interpreted. And those things still happen when someone has dementia. And yet we are kind of taught to believe, well, they can't read the room anymore. And my sense, and I'd love to know yours, I think they read the room even better because, you know, when other senses slip, I think others pick up. But what are your thoughts on that?
I agree 100%. My grandfather was one of those people, even before that he could always tell you who anybody was or, you know, he would – you could tell what kind of environment he was in at all times. And so when he got dementia, he was able to, anytime you would approach him with anything, you see the look in his eyes just completely change. And you're like, oh, here we go. And it was always with a particular person or something that might have happened, or he might have remembered something that happened many years ago. with someone or confusing that person with someone. But instantly, if someone walked in the room and that person had a bad vibe, energy, whatever, or maybe they just got in an argument with someone and then came in, oh, he felt that 100%. And that was one of the things I mainly focused on when I went into facilities and I was working in facilities, was you need to keep your mood stable. Whatever is happening at home has to stay at home. When you come here to be with these people, you have to treat them as a person. Forget about what happened in your home. You have to deal with what you have in front of you and change your mood. Approach them with a smile, because they read all that. They really do. And don't scream at them. They're not deaf. They can hear you just fine. Just speak to them like a person. And it took a long time for me to learn that. I just learned that with experience, because, like you said, they don't teach you that. I just learned that as I was surrounded by it more and more frequently, because then I made sure that most of the jobs that I've taken have always been related to someone living with dementia. It always was in the memory care unit or going for training or doing whatever it was, but I focused on dementia, and it was because of that, because of caregivers. I worked in a facility that, you know, people, dementia, you forget things, and you might think that you're reverting back to some time ago. And I had an aide that told, the person kept asking for her husband. And she told her, your husband died years ago. Oh, well, she just went through the whole process of grieving and learning that her husband was dead, like if it just happened, because this person wasn't trained. And it's the first time I physically saw that. I've heard it. I taught it, but I was physically, me seeing that, I was like, oh, my gosh. This is no. And I reinforce the education even more. But you definitely feel the energy and the attitude with people. They feel it, and they will continuously react to it. They will.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is so true. I mean, we learned that with my mom as well. And it took us back, because, you know, my dad had passed away. And even at the funeral, it was interesting. People were like, wow, your mom's doing really, really great. And my mom was always really social. She kind of cared for everybody, you know. And so she was making sure everyone was okay with their grief at the funeral and the service. And, you know, I had to explain to people, she's not connecting that's her husband in the casket.
Right.
You know,
that's not who she remembers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was so thankful of that, you know, so she went, and she was gracious, and she interacted, and she felt purposeful and all of those things. But I thought, oh my gosh. But then afterwards, you know, she would start asking, where was Dad? And in the beginning, again, no one told us. So we would say, oh, you know, Dad passed away. And then you'd see that over and over again. And then we kind of decide as a family we weren't going to do that. And then somebody would slip and, you know, it be repeated, or a staff person might as well. And your heart just breaks, you know, because our reality is not theirs. And like, I never told my mom I got divorced. You know, my brother, you know, there were things in their lives too. They never told my mom, because it would be, you couldn't explain to her why. And, you know, my parents always loved my husband, and, you know, that would have just been devastating, you know, for her. And he would still come visit and things. And that wasn't an important factor, because it was really about, was she safe? You know, was she, you know, pain free? Was she comfortable? And, and I think when we, you know, focus on that emotional side, we give care so much better. And I think sometimes we have to put up kind of a tough little wall to block those that might attack us for doing that, because they don't understand. And some of them just don't want to understand.
They think it's a lie
either.
To that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I had one person when I was out speaking, saying, because I would call him like a fiblet, you know, kind of that little white lie. And they said, well, I couldn't do that. You know, I was raised Catholic, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And they just kind of ringed me up one side and down another. And I said, I'm not going to say that you have to do it. I'm just going to say it will probably bring your mom a lot more peace if you're able to do that. But mm-hmm. she just thought I was the worst person in the world, you know, for doing that, because that was going to go against her religion and how she was brought up. And, you know, what I tell, try to explain to people is it's kind of like when you tell somebody that, you know, they're never going to have to move to a community or nursing home or wherever they land, memory care. You said that and you believed it at the time. You know, the circumstances were different. And mm-hmm. you have to realize, you have to kind of let go of that guilt and realize that things have changed. And, you know, we're the only ones that can really accept that things have changed, you know, because we do have that ability. We do have our cognitive abilities to still logic, but it's hard when emotions get in the way. It's really, really a difficult thing to do for so many.
Well, remember, you're also going through the grieving process, which is the denial process.
Yep.
And even though you see that part is what needs to happen, you're not believing that that's what needs to happen because how could that be? There's no way. I still see my person there. They're still talking to me. It's very hard.
Yeah. So for you, you know, what helped you as an individual and a family member survive this process, you know, of caring? What were some of your favorite things that you learned or were able to tap into along the way?
So one of my favorite things that I was able to learn at that point was, I didn't realize at the time, but I was doing yoga every week, and I focused on doing that. But I was just learning what yoga was, and I thought it was just, you know, body movements and stretching, and that was it. Didn't realize it was a lot more. But I didn't realize how impactful it was on me during that time. But I knew that I had to do it. But at the same time, it was really laughing. My grandfather had a sense of humor, luckily, and he still had the sense of humor even until he passed. So we would go and we would joke and we would laugh, and we tried, and I say my mom and my grandfather, like, my grandfather was very difficult, my mom, but even with my mom, we had such a great time with my grandfather and tried to experience the best that we could with him for the ability, the time that we had him. And for the holidays, we always did it at my mom's house because we knew we couldn't get him out the house. So mm-hmm. that really got us through it because there was no way we were going to leave him behind. So we will always come to my mom, and we always had a good time. My brothers, when he couldn't come down the stairs anymore, my brothers would bring him down, and he would sit with us and all the grandkids and the great-grandkids, and he had a good old time. And we have a lot of pictures of everyone for the holidays. We were always together. But it was always something that was very near and dear to me, and it always felt it made it easy to have that mm-hmm. that support for all of us. I think I'm speaking for everyone in my family, it's just, it made it so much easier to just laugh and enjoy the time. And the other aspect was once, like, we got a case manager and we got to learn what dementia was and what resources we had out there. There are agencies that paid a loved one for caregiving. There are agencies that will send out someone. There are agencies that will help you with Meals on Wheels. So they'll bring food to you. They'll, if you can't afford it, they will, they have agencies that will drop off your medications prepackaged. That we just learned so much. And it's the little simple things that made it so much easier for everyone. And the last thing I learned was the importance of the power of attorney when it came down to that piece, because I didn't know what power of attorney was. And mm-hmm. one of the agencies that he had says, "Who's his power of attorney?" And we all looked at each other like, "What is that?" And they mm-hmm. explained it, and we all made the consecutive decision that it would be me. And I was more than happy to take the responsibility on doing that. And I took it on, and I took it on with pride. My grandfather agreed because he was still at that time. He was in and out, but we made sure that he was with it at that time when he was able to sign the paperwork, and he was good. He was happy with me being the person. So it just made that process so much smoother, having that in place as well, which I didn't know.
Well, why don't we, you know, I can't believe how fast the hour always goes, and I should know better.
Oh, yes.
but I want to make sure that we highlight what you offer people through your company at Puzzled Mind and Body.
Well, thank you. I actually work with caregivers. I have a support group online in Facebook called Puzzled Mind and Body. Caregiver support group, the mentor caregiver support group. But my main focus is education, because you're never going to care for yourself first. You're just not going to do it because you're stressed about not knowing. So my main goal is to provide education. So I do provide short webinars, handouts, PDF by email. I send it out. Or did you knows, checklists, things like that. Webinars, I do free webinars as well. And then with paid services, I do the seminars and trainings. I also am working this year coming up to post some videos for 10 to 20 minute meditations, 10 and 20 minutes of yoga, just because I know an hour might be too long for a caregiver. That might be too, they can't afford to do an hour worth of caring for themselves. They might only be able to do 10 minutes at a time. So I'm going to try to post some of that stuff up there too for free resources, and connect them to whatever resources and answer the questions, whatever it is that they need. I do have paid resources such as Reiki, longer yoga, one-on-ones, consultations, and the trainings, meditations, and things like that. Everything's mm-hmm. on the website. And my website is growing all the time. I add things all the time.
Wonderful. And now you have an upcoming event on January 14th. It looks like an online Alzheimer's disease and dementia care seminar, which is going to be an all-day thing from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Central Time. Yes. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, too?
Okay, so that is actually my dementia seminar. It's the original seminar that I started out with. If you qualify, you can become a certified dementia practitioner. And basically, it's just going to say that you have a little bit more education and can assist with questions and any issues that you might run into. But it's an all-day seminar. It starts from the beginning, gets you through all the stages, talks about behaviors for people with dementia. It talks about techniques and tips to help transition processes, deal with behaviors at that moment. So it touches on a lot of life, and then it goes into learning what the power of attorney is, hospice, options, what it is exactly, and what does it include, along with palliative care, respite care, and different things like that.
Wonderful. And then you also have a resource section in there. You've got the Alzheimer's Association. You've got information mm-hmm. on yoga and meditation and Reiki. But then you also have a couple of movies listed here, The Father, Still Alice, Concussion. I remember watching mm-hmm. Concussion when I was on the road speaking, and I think I watched it three times, and I got so angry.
I got
so angry that this was hidden, mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe it. I had to go back and watch it again. There's another one that might be of interest called Ice Cream in the Cupboard, and you can access that one through Amazon. And Pat, I can't think of his last name. I'm losing it right now. But this is basically a real story about he and his wife who had dementia. And it's an inside look of behaviors that a lot of times aren't talked about and can be kind of scary. And how a family had to deal with it and how hard they tried to find support and things. But just an excellent Mubi, and I think you can access that through Amazon on a link for free, if I'm not mistaken on that one.
And what is it called again?
Ice Cream in the Cupboard.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look into that.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. very, very well done, I think. Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of those things that we don't always, you know, talk about. You know, there's, you know, with any illness, there are things that we don't like to share. And sometimes it's because we're in denial and we don't really want to think mm-hmm. it's happening.
Yeah.
and it's really important to have those conversations, people. It really, really is. But I get it when you're talking to people that don't have any empathy or compassion or resources for you, or they look like deer in the headlights and they just want to scoot and run from you because they don't know how to help you. That mm-hmm. shuts us down a lot of times, the way people react, mm-hmm. and makes us feel more isolated. So it's very important to reach out to people like Johanna. And again, go to her website, puzzledmind.org, puzzledmind.org. You can also email her at johanna.johns@puzzledmind.org. And then again, you can visit her Facebook page, Puzzled Mind and Body LLC, and her you have a Facebook support group as well that people mm-hmm. can access. And I think, you know, right now on the radio show, if you're listening from there, I think the link might be screwed up, but I'm going to fix it right after mm-hmm. right after the show ends, because I can't edit it right now. But I think some extra stuff got added in there for whatever reason and isn't connecting. We've got just a few more minutes regarding the show. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts about when people talk about stages of dementia? Does it matter? I mean, there's the different scales, 1 to 3, 1 to 4, 1 to 7.
Right.
what are your thoughts on all of that?
So I think it is important in the sense of how you're going to care for that person and what you need to do during that stage. But overall, you're still going to care for the person. So there are the 7 stages of dementia, but then you have your early, your moderate, and your severe. So early is typically 1 to 3, and then moderate is 4 to 5, and severe 6 to 7. But a person can be in 3 and 4 at the same time. One day they can be at 4, and then the next day they're at 3. So in that sense, it doesn't matter, because it you're kind of going back and forth. The part that matters is during your early stages, you want to make sure you're still promoting their independence. Don't do things for them. That's going to frustrate them more and create more stress that's not needed. And don't put any more stress on yourself. Believe me, you're going to have it later. So let them do what they need to do. Just make sure that they're safe. And you want to make sure that you're talking to that person. They might not be ready to do your power of attorney or anything like that, or think about the financial. You got the durable medical and financial power of attorney. Which ones do they want? Do they have a living will? What do they want later on in life? Do they want to go in a facility? Do they want to be at home? Do they have an agency that they want to work with? There's a lot of things that you have to think about in those beginning stages. In the moderate stage, they're starting to be more cognitively impaired and being able to do less for themselves. So you're going to start to pick up the pieces. When are you going to decide to bring in help? At that point in time, I will already, and you can even start doing this in the beginning stages, but during the moderate stage, you need to focus on, I need a support system. I can't do this all by myself. And you got to figure out what is that going to be? Is it going to be an adult daycare? Is it family members coming in? Is it caregivers coming in? Is it a person going to respite or having respite at home, which I didn't even realize that was an option. Having respite at home, you leave the house and the person stays at home with your loved one. And you're going to be doing more for them. but you're still going to want to make sure that they're eating, they're drinking. You want to care for them the same way, and you want to encourage the fluid. Make sure you're not letting them sleep all day because they might be tired because you got sundowners that happens in the evening time, afternoon time. So you want to see the patterns. You keep a daily routine. That's the most important thing. And then in the last stages, okay, are you going to bring in hospice? If you are, when are you going to bring them in? What hospice program you want to use? Are you going to be comfortable with giving medications? My mom did not, even though my grandfather was not responsive anymore and he was struggling to breathe, she did not want to give him morphine because she felt that that was killing him because she just didn't want to let him go. So when I was with him, I would give him the morphine as scheduled, but she couldn't do it. So I would do it for him so he wasn't struggling. So you want to make sure, are you okay with giving morphine? If not, who are you okay with giving morphine, or what other things you want to put in place instead of morphine to make it easier on them? But you want to make sure that you're already planning everything out, because when that time comes, you don't want to be in the middle of, like, I don't know. It's going to be even more stressful because you don't know, and now you don't have a plan. So it's that's the most important things about the stages for me, is the planning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you know, one of the things I want to mention too is you had mentioned about giving morphine, but that can come down to who's comfortable making meals, who's comfortable assisting somebody in the shower, doing finances. A lot of times we assign things to people and they're not comfortable doing them. And if they're not comfortable, the person with dementia is going to feel that, and there's going to be an impact on how that job gets done. So it's really, really critical to have an open conversation, which I know sometimes can be difficult. And sometimes we play down, well, you know, you get the easy jobs. Well, you know, nothing is easy. Everybody's squeezing something in, you know, in their schedule. And some of us have different relationships, which make getting certain tasks done, you know, easier or more difficult, depending on what that relationship is. The other thing I wanted to add was, you know, during dementia chats where I facilitate a conversation with people living with dementia, we actually had a long conversation, and I can't remember which episode it was, but where they talked about, you know, they feel like, many of them feel like they go through all seven stages just about every day, but they don't want to tell people that they're experiencing these types of symptoms because they don't want them to think, you know, they're in the end zone right now. This is the end of the game. It's like, because, you know, they say our symptoms are so fluid, and depending on what is happening in our life and how taxing certain things are, like one of the things I'm really advocating for right now is getting organizations and families as well to understand that we have to have some kind of hierarchy and support when people are involved, to allow them to, you know, let go a little bit, because it can take too much out of them. And a lot of times we keep adding things because they've always been able to do it well, and that's not healthy for them. And so we have to have some supports and some backups, and know this is fluid. To me, that would have been
helpful.
And
it's great when you have, the disagreements, but then are able to listen to each other rather than scream and yell, because it does torment a family. It really does. My grandfather never wanted to talk about what he wanted when he passed away. He just didn't want to hear it. So it was left for us to make those decisions for him. What he did want, that he told us many years ago, there was no way we were going to be able to afford to do it, which was send him back to Puerto Rico. And there was just no way we could afford that. So we were trying to come up with alternatives, and he didn't want to talk about death. He didn't want to talk about end stage of anything. But there was times that he was with it enough that we could have a conversation. We decided as family, we're just going to decide on our own what we were going to do. And we got him a suit, but he wouldn't, if we would have told him that it was for when he passed away, he would have never even tried it on. So we told him we're going to do family pictures. And he always wore suits. So let's do some pictures. And we brought all the grandkids and everybody. We all have pictures with him in the suit. And this is the suit that we used for his funeral.
I'm going to cut you off because we're gonna the show's gonna cut us off here. So thank you so much. You are a wealth of information. Please go to puzzledmind.org for more information and feel free to reach out to Johanna. As you can tell, she is a wealth of information. And don't forget to like, click, and share because there's a lot of other people that you know that need this information as well. We're gonna talk on Thursday with the All's Buddies app, which will help you as well. So talk soon, everyone. Bye now.
Hi, this is Suzanne Newman, host of the Answers for Elders podcast and radio show. We are the North Star that guides you through the complicated journey of senior care with trusted experts in money, law, living solutions, and more. So join us on this station, your favorite podcast channel, or just go to answersforelders.com. Meet the way showers who will help your journey go a lot easier.